You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, proudly brought to you by Shox. This is Lionel here, and I've been so impressed by the sound quality of my Open Run Pro 2 headphones over the past few weeks. The bone conduction technology really is a game changer because it maintains your awareness of your surroundings without compromising the sound quality. Instead of the sound going in through your ear, as they would with more conventional headphones, the sound passes through the bones behind your ear, so you get a perfect combination of comfort and crisp, clear audio without anything really impeding your hearing of what's going on around you. And that's ideal if you are out doing some sport, running or on your bike or whatever it happens to be. The Open Run Pro 2 headphones and the Eliud Kipchoge signature model in particular are the flagship Shox model, but there's a set of headphones to suit all budgets and every situation. There's even a pair that you can use underwater, the Open Swim Pro headphones. There's a New Year's sale which starts on Boxing Day with some very nice discounts on a range of the headphones, but all of our listeners can get £10 off a set of Shox at uk.shox.com. You just need the discount code CYCLING10. The discount code has been very popular this festive season and it will be active until December the 31st. So there's still a bit of time to save some money on a great set of Shox. That's if Father Christmas doesn't leave some under your tree, of course. A big thank you to Shox for sponsoring our Review of the Year series. Maybe next time you tune into the Cycling Podcast in the new year, you'll be hearing us loud and clear on your new set of Shox headphones. So go to uk.shox.com and use the discount code CYCLING10 to get £10 off any purchase. That offer is valid until December the 31st.
On Thursday, the route of the 2025 Vuelta a España, the race's 90th anniversary edition, was unveiled in Madrid. The Gran Salida will take place in Italy, Turin to be precise, making it the second start in a row beyond Spanish borders. Hard to believe now, but La Vuelta didn't depart from foreign shores or turf until its rollout from Lisbon in 1997. It was from the Portuguese capital that the contemporary peloton would also begin its journey, five and a bit centuries after Vasco da Gama set sail for India. From the same spot on the banks of the Tagus estuary. And 50 years exactly after the so-called Carnation Revolution, the coup that finally brought democracy to Portugal in 1974, which we explored in a pre-race Kilometre Zero.
And that was the signal for the troops in Lisbon, effectively, to mobilise. And then the second signal, there were two signals.
Favourite for the first red jersey after a seaside evening TT was Wout van Aert. First across the line, though, was an old friend, Euskaltel or Euskadi's Luis Ángel Mate, aka the Lynx of Marbella, running his last Vuelta. Mate,
we knew that this was going to be an important Vuelta for you. It's the last race as a professional, but it's already an important race because you were leading the time trial.
Yeah, for sure. When I passed the finish line, I showed the time. Leader for one time, eh? Arbitro, tiempo, time, annulé. Yeah, for me it's a for sure special one because it's the last one. I hope to be in the front someday. Why not?
How many watts per kilo are you doing these days? Twenty minutes.
This is a secret. This is I can't say to you that I don't know because I don't have power meter in the TT bike.
Oh, no. Lewis, can you win the Vuelta?
For sure.
Later, we'd be reporting and recording on Van Aert's umpteenth near miss, his nemesis in the first Mayor Rojo, Brandon McNulty, one of UAE's conga line of potential race winners.
Not really satisfied. I didn't feel great, just good, but yeah, too soon in the TT it started to hurt and it was a long way to the finish, so yeah, I don't know really the result. I think I finished quite short still, but yeah, the feeling was not how I hoped for. Yeah, first I went to see the GC because I was also thinking about the red jersey, so yeah, if I'm still close, I still want to give it a shot in the next days. And for sure, the next 2 days, we try to go for the sprint.
You're 2 seconds behind. Third position, 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah, then all is to play. So that's good.
Buon tarde, Fran Reyes.
Buon tarde, Daniel Friber.
We're in Portugal. Fran, what a view, what a setting, what a scene. You were excited about tonight. You were promising me all day that you would find the most wonderful location, and you have exceeded my expectations. Fran, last year in the podcast, we used to end our episodes with some wistful gazing from you. Don't get too wistful, because it's the start of a new adventure for both of us, but just describe at least the scene.
So the landscape is exactly the one that I was dreaming of when I woke up this morning. I told and I sent you this message saying, Daniel, if we could get a table just in front of the sea, taking advantage that the race is finishing right in the coast, it would be great. On a nice bar on which we were sitting on stools and with some glasses of wine. In that regard, we have changed a bit the tone, because we are not in stools but on simple chairs, and we are not drinking wine but beer. 0.0 beer in your case, which is something a bit offensive to my Spanish culture. You know?
My choice of liquid refreshment was contentious, but there was at least a consensus about the local delicacy.
Rite of passage when you're in Lisbon. So I've heard, pastéis de nata, these famous custard tarts, they're everywhere now. It's a very recent phenomenon, but of course they've been eating them and making them in Portugal for centuries, I hear, and it all started where I am standing currently. Pastéis de Belém, it's about 50 meters from the start line today, and this was the first place to ever make this sort of dessert tart. I don't even like custard. Don't really like eggy things, never had one, so this feels like a good place to start, or at least a rite of passage that you have to do when you're here anyway.
Hola,
como que isso de sair?
So put a six pack, the only six pack in evidence today, unfortunately. Here, they come in like this cardboard, a white cardboard sleeve, a bit like bacci. Have you seen those in Italy? I'm gonna have one now. It's kind of giving me the ick, because as I said, I really don't like eggy things, but I'm gonna try one now. You can probably hear the crunch. I mean, yeah, tastes sweet, tastes eggy.
No. For me, one, two,
Basta.
Food, all in. All in.
Quieren un...
No, thank you. Enjoy it, okay? Enjoy it. Yeah.
Stefan Flesta. Press, Chief, Red Bull, Bora, Hans Kort. Stefan, I've never had one of these before, and I've just had one now, and it's the original Pastel de Belém. So I've got nothing to compare it to. Is it a good Pastel de Nata?
I guess it's the best in the world. Really. It's the original one.
Stage two would take the race through Fatima, scene of a famous miracle. Of course, no such thing could occur in professional cycling, could it?
Ben O'Connor, we're going to Fatima today, scene of a miracle in 1917. Do miracles exist in cycling, professional cycling?
Yeah, I reckon they do. I reckon Poggi's TT and Le Planche Beaufy is up there with one of those miracles, probably.
Have you ever experienced a miracle in your career?
I reckon the only miracle I can think of is that I've made the front group of every echelon so far in my career, which is surprising. But maybe this race will prove me wrong.
A lot of riders being very modest in answer to this question, not giving themselves enough credit. It doesn't sound like a miracle to me. I mean, you know, you're a good rider.
No, exactly, but echelons come down to something else. Sometimes it's luck, sometimes it's just sometimes it's good position. I don't know what it is, so... For me, that's what I count as the closest one I can think of.
The spoils on that day went to Caden Groves, a crimson-red consolation to Van Aert.
Fran, there were changes on general classification, and the American domination of the general classification and the Vuelta a España has ended. Who's in the Mayor Rojo tonight?
We have Wout van Aert, who, with the bonus seconds that he claimed both at the intermediate sprint and at the finish, has managed to overtake.
Day three, our last hours in Portugal, and in the searing heat of Castelo Branco, a blistering sprint win by van Aert, chronicled for us in real time by sometime commentator, sometime team director Matt White.
They're all fighting for his wheel, so they're all screwed. Oh, he's gone.
Walt's gone early. Here comes Caden back over the top and for the finish, Popena.
My name is Ruben Silva. I'm a journalist for Cycling Up to Date, and you're listening to the Cycling Podcast.
In Portugal, give us three facts about Castelo Branco.
It is extremely hot city, as you may see for today's stage. It's located very close to Serra da Estrela, which is the highest point in continental Portugal. Very much a gateway for people that want to go to Spain from central Portugal, because you cross over the mountains and in the other side you have this beautiful city.
Fran Reyes, Cartel Reyes, boa tarde.
Boa tarde, Daniel.
Finally, tomorrow, Fran. We can change language. I don't know about you, but I've been preparing for our re-entry into Spain. I'm already trying to think on Spanish time. Of course, we're an hour behind Spain, which will accelerate everything tomorrow. And I think the race might accelerate.
Pulses were racing in the smouldering temperatures. Or was mine a cold sweat in response to some of Fran's podcasting?
Cycling lives on an arms race when it comes to performance and to performance strategies. We have seen this ice best coming into play. We have seen the odd pair of what's the word in English for this lingerie, women's lingerie that on which riders put not oh lingerie, right? Okay, sorry. I see by your embarrassed laughter that lingerie was clearly the wrong word, on which they put the ice cubes in order to put them behind their necks.
Ice cubes inserted into women's lingerie, put down the back of their necks. I'm not familiar with this cooling technique, Fran.
I mean, the panties. I'm not sure
this is family friendly listening either. Women's stockings.
Women's stockings, that's it. Okay. Yes, so those are stockings with ice. Wow. We have seen them.
The next day, we finally got some air in the mountains of Extremadura. Not that the passions of Señor Reyes could be easily tempered.
You should describe this extraordinary location for recording tonight, which I would suggest is probably definitely in the top five most scenic recording locations we've ever been blessed with on the Cycling Podcast. Certainly when I've been in the hot seat as host.
Buenas tardes, Daniel. Buenas tardes, queridos escuchantes. We are atop.
God, Fran's got a sexy voice on again.
that's my Spanish voice, you know. In Spanish, it sounds super sexy.
Man in French, Spanish, yeah.
No, so this is we are atop Pico Villuercas. This is one of the most deserted areas of Spain in terms of population, yet it still keeps its natural, fascinating essence, and it is not a green landscape, rather yellow and earth-like colors. Not many trees, yet lots of vegetation. And we have a mirador that covers probably 100 kilometers around.
The middle distance of the Vuelta's future suddenly bore a familiar look. No one had really known what to expect from Primoz Roglic after his crash-curtailed Tour de France. And so, of course, Rog delivered the most foregone of all bike race conclusions on this first summit finish.
And it would be his counterattack in the dying metres that prompted Van Etveld to launch his sprint. Roglic was glued to the young Belgian's wheel and indeed would ultimately subject him to the first Roglification of his career. Van Etveld possibly celebrating early?
Yes, he did. And Primoz came from just under his shoulder.
And certainly greeting his defeat on the line with an anguished cry and maybe a choice word or two.
It's nice. I mean, you know, every victory is great. Huh? So like I said, I mean, for myself, it's always a bit of ups and downs and a lot of challenges to overtake and glad, I mean, to that it pays off. Huh? I mean, I don't say it, but yeah, for sure, I had really really hard, to work really hard to actually be even able to come here.
Q1 big, in fact, Ferris wheel sized eye roll. at least from Roglic's former teammate George Bennett.
Primoz did Primoz things yesterday.
Yeah, tell everybody shit for the last 2 months and then come out and beat them. But no, it doesn't work anymore. Everyone knows. It's almost like, you know, on Instagram, like when you see a couple posting lots of photos, you know that their relationship's on the rocks. It's like, it's the same version of that. The more he tells you he's bad, the more he's flying.
Roglic was now in red, 8 seconds clear of João Almeida. A fourth Vuelta for the Slovenian would equal Harris's number of victories, without the caveats or question marks. 6 days in, though, we already knew that this Tour of Spain would make history. Props for that, not to Roglic, but a Carrefour supermarket.
Frank, you'll be able to tell your children, if you ever have children, that you were there. You were there on this historic day. Describe the scene for us, this very surreal scene.
So it is a very solemn occasion for the history of the Vuelta and the history of professional cycling, as we are about to witness the first ever start of a Grand Tour stage from inside a supermarket.
What can we see at this moment?
So we can see all the cashiers lined up, and parallel to them, there is a small portion of the neutralized zone on which every rider is waiting on his bike to actually take the start. We can see Marc Soret taking a look at the frigos.
Eyeing the freezer section.
Yes, eyeing the freezer section. I'm wondering if he could get a Calipo for himself. We see all the Carrefour workers enthusiastic, clapping at the riders, and all the expectations and the hype finally reaching its peak, its summit.
Fran, when the riders started to enter the supermarket about 10 minutes ago, I saw a lot of smiles, probably more smiles than I've ever seen at the start of a bike race. Now it's kind of turned to, well, poker faces.
A surreal, almost mind-bending tone had been set. That day would continue in the same vein, with Ben O'Connor's inspired trolley dash across Andalusian hillsides bringing him a stage win, the red jersey, and a near 5 minute advantage over Roglic on GC.
Is 5 minutes dangerous for Ben O'Connor?
We will see at the end of the race, no?
Yes. Thank you. Thanks.
We will see at the end of the race, huh?
Yeah, we were not aware of how much the supermarket stage had in store for us.
What was Primoz Roglic? Whatever could Primoz Roglic have been referring to? That was the voice we heard at the start of today's podcast. A very eventful day on the Vuelta a España. What you can probably hear now in the background are the cicadas. I must confess, friend, I don't know the word for cicada in Spanish. In Spanish.
Cigarra.
Cigarra.
Yeah, like that.
Well, that's what you can hear. Why can people hear the cigarras, Fran?
Because we are sitting between olive trees, just 1 kilometer from the finish of today's stage, on the spot on which all the team buses were parked.
I reckon that was the most enjoyable win I've had. Yeah. Probably the most enjoyable win of my career, to be honest. Just felt like I was out there on a mission today, and just to have that feeling all day. Completed like this and now have the red jersey and lead this race, by far the most enjoyable part of my career so far. I think it's going to be good watching from now on.
The Roglic remontada needed to start soon, perhaps immediately, the next day. We saw a wayward, seemingly confused Red Bull run towards Córdoba.
I will preface this by saying that I did make my way to the Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe bus after the finish, and I wanted to hear from Pachi Vila, who we heard from yesterday, their direct sportif, about what their plan had been and whether he felt they'd executed it properly. He said to me, I need to understand some things. He said to me very sort of solemnly, quite gravely, I need to understand some things. So today is probably not the time. And he then went on to the team bus. This was after he'd sat in the Red Bull Bora team car for quite a while, obviously sort of debriefing with Shane Archbold, the former Bora Ryder is also one of the DSs here. He's driving the car.
The driving mullet.
And they'd obviously talked about what had gone on, and then Pachi went straight onto the bus. And as I say, I mean, I'm being slightly flippant, but I do believe my sense was that he wasn't thrilled with what he'd seen from his rides, or he was confused by certain things.
Yeah, I mean, we know from some other exchanges that we had at the finish that it was the plan for Red Bull Bora to accelerate in that climb, that they were planning to fight for those bonus seconds for Primoz Roglic, and maybe even fight for the stage.
There was nothing there to settle the Red Bull nerves. Instead, while Sepp Kuss was expertly setting up Van Aert for his second stage win, Alexander Vlasov looked as though he was settling scores, at least to Pavel Sivakov.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I'm quite pissed at Vlasov today. I think it was, in my opinion, really, I don't know, but it seems really personal because Primoz didn't even sprint for, didn't even sprint at the end. And I watched the footage, was literally only him pulling for with Wout van Aert in the wheel. And yeah, he did a perfect lead out for him. So yeah, that was a bit unfortunate. I thought, at one point I thought I made it, but yeah, really disappointed. But it's just like this.
Personal, what could be the reason?
I don't know, maybe because I have a Russian name. We raced quite a lot together when we were young, but also I noticed that also in the climbs when I move, he's always moving with me. So I don't know, I just don't see why they would give 6 minutes to O'Connor yesterday and close me down for just a few seconds, knowing that I'm for GC slower than Roglic in the TTs, also on the punchy climbs, he's much faster than me. I don't know. It was really weird for me to see that.
There were subplots everywhere. You couldn't take your eyes off the race, although Fran and I frequently did.
Isn't it amazing the geometry of the olive trees? I mean, I like how, of course, it's the hand of the human being, but it has displayed some interesting patterns here and there, isn't it?
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Very beautiful, Fran. Of all the provinces, and we've talked about a few of them this week, of Andalusia, this is probably the one that has the most...
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10/1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
From geometrically aligned olive groves to another perfect and unmistakable paradigm, Primoz Roglic's signature move, this time on the Rampa Inumana above Cazorla.
It's as though Enric Mas might even Roglify Primoz. Mm-hmm. Or massify Roglic.
It would have been massive.
I don't think anyone's been Enric'd or massified. And sure enough, Primoz Roglic, after the Roglification of, what was the climb the other day that he
Pico
won
Villarcas.
Pico Villarcas. He has also now Roglified Cazorla.
Down, followed by Eddie Dunbar, who for the first time we saw near the forefront of the race. The forefront. See, so he was eighth today, 26 seconds down on Roglic with Leonard Van Etbol, Jack Hyke rounding out the top 10. Richard Carapaz lost 39 seconds, while Ben O'Connor, current red jersey wearer, lost 46 seconds on top of those 10 bonus seconds that Primoz Roglic took on him by winning the stage.
UAE's would-be contenders had been decimated by misfortune and also illness, but Adam Yates salvaged his race by winning in Granada, the city where a few months earlier he'd got married. In the Sierra Nevada, O'Connor had rallied, keeping an unconvincing Roglic at the safe distance of nearly 4 minutes as the race prepared to head north.
Fran, Reyes, for the final time. That's making me sad, Fran. But there'll be time for tears later in the podcast. Fran, we are in your home, adopted home, Granada, and, well, a special location for recording tonight. Describe the scene, describe what's happening. What you did miss, actually, when you were just inside was Night Oman, which we heard at the start of the podcast, emerging from where the press room was today, where the riders have been taking their showers and being greeted like a rock star. But what else can we see? Who else can we see?
Well, right now we can see Carlos Rodriguez, Florian Lepovic, Brandon Rivera, Jens Jukiler, now DS at Alpes in de Kooning. Basically, everyone, the whole Vuelta peloton, walking right in front of us after taking a shower in this Hotel Vinci Albaicin. We are in the Carrera de la Virgen, which is a beautiful avenue in Granada, on which one of the most outstanding churches in the city is built. And also, we are in front of my Chinese academy. The academy on which I study Chinese is just in front of us.
Well. More about that in a second. But Fran, what do you notice about the Bora riders who have just walked past, almost the whole team? Something unusual or significant about, well, there goes Primoz. There goes Primoz Roglic. What do you notice about all of the Bora riders?
Is that a mask?
It is. The masked men.
Yes, a face mask. Yep.
Primoz is walking past with his little suitcase and his agent, Mattia. Galli, who occasionally isn't, well, named on this podcast, he never features on it. But are they unique among the riders off to catch the plane tonight from Granada to Vigo in all wearing masks? COVID is going to be, unfortunately, a topic of conversation later in the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, we already know of several COVID positives that have gone public, like the one that Joao Almeida tested yesterday evening, and that put him out of the race, forced him to withdraw from the race. And we also have learned some other COVID positives that we can't disclose, but that are indeed in the Vuelta peloton. And this is a lottery, because it's not only that if you catch COVID or not, it's also about how it affects your body.
Fran, I feel as though we could just sit here for an hour and describe one by one every rider that's going past, exactly sort of their body language, what they're carrying. I just saw Mikel Landa and Mattia Cattaneo a few minutes ago going to get themselves an ice cream at the Gelateria just down the road. However, we won't do that. We won't do that, although the riders continue to file by.
Yeah. What a procession, eh? What a beautiful procession.
It is a beautiful procession. And, it's a great place for people, for fans to see the riders. Here comes Richard Carapaz. You can probably hear some Ecuadorian fans. Carapaz would turn out, or has turned out, to be one of the stars of the day. He's also wearing a mask. We'll hear about what Carapaz did. And there goes Ben O'Connor, the race leader. Undisturbed by the fans. I think he's been recognised by someone. Someone's asking for a selfie there. Yeah. But
you know, actually, riders, when they are not dressed in cycling clothes, they look less heroic, right? They look like weak, very lean,
so
you know?
They look less erotic or heroic.
They look lanky, right?
We were leaving Andalusia and also Fran behind with a heavy heart.
It's been my privilege to share this time with you.
It's been my pleasure, mate. I mean, I'm always proud every time that you invite me to participate on the podcast and spending the whole week chatting with you every evening. It has been great. I mean, I get to learn a lot from you. I get to enjoy the experience of recording a podcast that I have been listening to ever since I was back in university. And it's also great to be able to provide listeners with my point of view.
We welcome Richard Abraham in Galicia on the day of a third Van Aert victory.
Buenas tardes, Daniel.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable with Daniel. Danny. Danny, usually when I have to make restaurant reservations over the phone, it's Danny. I don't know why. It makes me sound like a fancy pants Spanish, overpriced Spanish footballer, which, you know.
Yeah, Danny. Cofidis was signed.
Yeah.
On a bit of a whim for a Vuelta breakaway or two.
Yeah. Danny. To be honest, I wouldn't put it past Cofidis to sign me anyway, Richard. Some of their recruitment.
We may have been playing musical chairs, but there was no sign of O'Connor relinquishing his throne, at least not yet. In the spring, he'd finished fourth in the Giro, but arguably got more exposure a few weeks later for his temperamental appearances in that documentary. A slightly sore subject.
If people haven't talked to you but only seen the Netflix series, do you think they have the right impression of you?
If you watch the Netflix series, no. But I guess that's what TV is. It's there for entertainment and drama, and it doesn't always show you and how you should be and how you actually are. At the moment, I'm a happy man. I'm relaxed. I'm enjoying it. For sure, I'm an angry man sometimes. I'd hope I'm not a bad person, and yeah.
I don't want to traumatise you, but how uncomfortable was watching that on Netflix? And just describe the experience of watching yourself.
I think some moments are pretty true. Others, there's just like zero context to the shot. And you know, the shot's not related at all to the event in play. So it can be a little frustrating, but whatever. You have to kind of just forget about it. And really, who cares what someone in America or another person in Australia thinks of you? You know, I believe in myself and I go about my business how I choose it.
You just watch it at home and know what was coming.
Well, the thing is, you don't really know what's coming because you don't have any preview. You have a hint from the team saying that's how it can happen, but I don't know what part of the questions they get you. And remember, you sit in front of this camera for 2 hours answering questions. Things sometimes just get a bit out of hand and they just take context from there, even though it's not related.
The following day, we'd feature two Irishmen. Stage winner Eddie Dunbar and Stephen Barrett, O'Connor's coach.
The team objective was top five, but between me and Ben, it was more, okay, I think you could do podium. Because we see the numbers, we saw what he did, and it was maybe a bit between us all of what he could do. And yeah, like I said, we're at a situation now where he's in a red jersey, and you know, he's having fun, he's enjoying us, but it's a new challenge for him as well. So we're just taking it, he's taking it day by day, and like I said, he see where story takes him in the next few days.
O'Connor was rising to the challenge, just like his suddenly authoritative team. Authoritarian, some like EF Education Richard Carapaz more or less said, after a bit of mid-race argy-bargy on stage 11.
Hay muchas maneras de defender el maillot, ¿sabes? Y de la manera que se está haciendo, me parece algo muy triste porque se está viendo una falta de respeto muy grande, ¿sabes? No sé.
It's not on me to apply the reglament or, you know, it's on them. They need to get all the information needed to take any decision before they give a fine. And I think it's that they didn't do that yesterday. So what I asked them is just, you didn't ask the protagonist about what happened. So I think you should do that before you take any decision.
Is your feeling that it wasn't just Decathlon blocking the road yesterday, but it was more than that? It was aggression from a particular rider. I think, based on what we've seen, it was Bouchard.
I mean, I cannot see it. I can't, as you guys, I mean, you saw the same things in TV as I did. I have the opinion of the protagonist, of one of them, a few of them actually. One of them is my rider, and he said that it is a contact between them, and he was on the ground. But yeah, I mean, I'm not the one in charge to apply the rules.
Il m'a touché à la fesse. Malheureusement, il est tombé. Je ne sais pas s'il a roulé dans le bas-côté. Moi, j'ai déchaussé, j'ai failli tomber aussi. Et voilà, je suis désolé qu'il soit tombé. Ce n'était pas l'objectif. Je n'étais pas content sur le comportement du coureur d'Arkea, Christian Rodriguez, qui était juste derrière Richard Carapaz.
Ellos intentaban bloquear la carretera y no dejaban que entrara en fuga y ha sido un poco agresivo. Hombre, cuando un corredor está por tierra, no es justo, ¿no?
As for the guys just blocking the road, like just doing nothing, minding their business, being at the front. I mean, I don't really know how you extract, like, where do you take that? Like, what happens if you're not allowed to ever just ride in the formation at the front of the road? I mean, there will never be any control anywhere. Look in the classics, they sprint for a corner, they block the road. But so I think there's two, it's really important to make the differentiation between the guy turning right on me and the guy turning left on Carapaz and putting them in the ditch. That's very different to the other guys that got the card that were just in the middle of the road, blocking the road, you know.
You made it through yesterday with a little bit of pushing and shoving. How do you do it?
Drop the shoulder. Just really, no, that's literally, you play rugby long enough, you get your shoulder under theirs. If you just get their bars on your hip, there's nothing they can do. So it's all about just getting the bars in front of theirs, getting the weight right, and making space.
No, I know some of the boys are wound up, but I'm happy with how we went about it. We didn't do anything wrong, and another day today. If you're in the middle of the peloton, I can't just tap the bloke in front of me to get to the front. How do you get to the front when the road's blocked? You know? Answer me that question. You're not just going to say, oh, can I just come to the front, please? That'd be nice. Just before the climb, can I start first wheel? It'd be really easy there.
That's not how the sport works. And I can say that we did absolutely nothing different or wrong, and we had showed no aggression to anyone else. I've been wanting to delete my Twitter, X, whatever it's called, account for a long time, so it's a good excuse to do it.
For wholesome content, a distinct lack of polemica, our first port of call was always Luis Angel Mate. We summoned the Lynx in Lugo on the morning of stage 13.
To pass the message that we need to... We need not forget the origin of the cycling. Now the cycling and the life go too fast. It's not only about the numbers, the cycling, the watt, the foot, the kilos of the foot, numbers, the watt, numbers, the kilometers, numbers. It's all about the numbers, and that is not the cycling. Cycling is also enjoy the races, enjoy the teammates, enjoy the landscapes, and enjoy the bike.
Yesterday you told me there's more chance of man landing on Mars than Luis Angel Mate landing in Madrid. Come on, Luis, don't break our hearts, man. Come on, you're going to make it, aren't you?
Yesterday was a little bit more better. And I hope, I don't know today, but I go day by day.
But you're not even near the back. You're safely in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, but in the beginning of the race, become really hard for take the breakaway. It's the most difficult part for me. And also I talk with Robert Gesin and other guys, and they say me the same. The beginning of the race with a lot of attacks, with the guys of GC, become the race really, really hard. In the final, it's okay. I have an old engine, slowly, and in the final, it's okay. The problem is the beginning.
It's because the other guys are focusing on numbers. Maybe you need more numbers in your life, Luis.
No, definitely no. I need more Vuelta of the Vuelta to ride along without pain in my legs, with breath and without numbers.
Stage 13, unfortunate for some, but not us, as we were graced by a cameo from Lucky Larry.
Vuelta a España, from Lisboa to Madrid.
Grande.
Speed was hard, but I had the leg, so, you know, sometimes you gain a bit, sometimes you lose.
Buenas tardes from the Puerto de Ancares, the summit of the Puerto de Ancares. I'm currently sitting on a trail about 50 meters from the finish line. First voices you heard tonight belong to Mike Woods. I'm going to spoiler this stage immediately and tell you that Mike Woods of Canada and Israel Premier Tech won stage 13 of the Vuelta a España. You heard his sort of jubilant cries as he embraced his direct sportif, Oscar Guerrero. Just after crossing the finish line. And you also heard Primoz Roglic sort of celebrating in a very understated Roglician way. A very good day for him. The voice you're about to hear. Well, we're celebrating because back on the podcast after an extended absence, too long, Lucky Larry Warbass, the Motown maestro, teammate of race leader, still race leader tonight, Ben O'Connor. Larry, how you doing?
Hey, Daniel. Yeah, doing well. Happy to be here and happy to be back on the podcast.
Larry, where are you? At home?
Yeah, I am just at home in Ez in France.
Alas, on the Puerto de Ancares, Primoz Roglic had taken his biggest bite to date out of O'Connor's lead, nearly 2 minutes. On the GC, the Aussie was now just 1 minute, 21 seconds ahead.
Ben has done really well to keep the gap that he's had up until now. You know, I mean, he's been in the red jersey for like quite amount of time and solid amount of time. And, you know, I thought, you know, on a day like Hazayanas, super hot, steep climb, the one, you know, that went into Granada, I thought that would be like a really hard day for him to, keep his lead, because if you crack there, you can lose a lot of time. But yeah, he was super composed and rode really well. So that impressed me. And after that, I was like, wow, maybe he'll be able to take it the whole way. I guess on the last couple of days, he has showed like some slight weakness, but, I think already for him, just being in the red jersey, for so long, winning the stage. Everything on, you know, from here on out is like a bonus. And I think, yeah, I still think he can probably hold on to the podium. I think to be able to hold Roglic off just until Madrid will be really difficult.
For now, O'Connor would continue to wear the Mayo Rojo. And we all suspected his heart on his sleeve.
The Netflix portrayal of Ben O'Connor. Have you seen that? Have you seen the latest series of the Netflix documentary?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Did you recognize the Ben O'Connor that you saw in that documentary?
Oh, yeah, I did, for sure.
Expand, elaborate, please.
Well, I mean, he could stress out a lot. But, yeah, that's just like his personality. So, you know, I mean, he doesn't really hide it that much. So, yeah, he can definitely be a ball of stress. But you know, that's who he is. And, you know, he's a good guy.
This is our final episode of 2024, and we'll take a bit of a break before returning in mid-January in time for the resumption of the racing with the 2025 season. I'd like to say a few thank yous from Daniel and me, firstly and most importantly to you, our listeners, and especially our friends of the podcast and 1101 Cappuccino subscribers. The media, and especially in cycling, is experiencing some well-publicised headwinds at the moment, so your support is more important than ever before, so thank you for listening, and for all your feedback too. A big thank you to everyone who has picked up a mic for us this year, especially to Brian Nygaard at the Giro, Mitch Docker, Richard Abraham and Graham Wilgos at the Tour, and Fran Reyes and Rob Hatch at the Vuelta. But whether they appeared on one episode or several, a big thank you to everyone. Likewise to Rose Manley and the Cycling Podcast Feminan team. To our producers, John Mooney, Tom Wally, Adam Bowie, Will Jones and Hugh Owen, year after year, you guys keep the show on the road. And behind the scenes, a big thank you to Spencer Martin, David Luxton and everyone at DLA, Mike Newman and everyone at Audio Boom, and the team at Supporting Cast who host our Friends of the Podcast episodes, as well as to Humphrey Waterhouse and Georgina, who help keep things running smoothly well behind the scenes. If you'd like to support us in 2025, sign up as a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. We've got another year of special episodes in store, and you can also join the discussion at our defiantly lo-fi forum, The Cannibal and Badger. So sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. In the meantime, season's greetings to one and all, and back to the Vuelta a España.
The next day, we asked another previous victim of the Netflix editors, Wout van Aert, to turn reviewer.
I think you came into the mix zone on one of the first days and you looked around and said, is this it? Just generally about the Vuelta, I mean, you had to write a Google review or a TripAdvisor review about the Vuelta. What struck you about this race that's different to other races you've done?
Yeah, it's a bit relaxed, like a lot of people say. But it's definitely true that it's less stress around and... it's just a nice atmosphere. There are always a lot of spectators on the side of the road, but it's not this crazy crowdness that you can experience in the Tour de France. So, on the other hand, I don't really like the late starts and the late finishes. It's a different day rhythm, and I'm awake always quite early, so that's something hard to deal with for me. But that's also something really specific that we always start late, and that's about it, yeah.
So 3 out of 5 on TripAdvisor.
No. 3.5 to 4, I would say. And also steep climbs, I forgot that one.
Another second place behind Caden Groves that day may have curbed Wout's enthusiasm. The next, we went back into the mountains, and the stage winner of 3 days earlier, Pablo Castrillo, was feeling pretty good.
I read some quotes from Castrillo, which had been reported by AS kind of immediately after the stage. And you know, they were saying that he did feel low on energy on the long drag. Well, it wasn't even a drag, it's steeper than that, isn't it? But the Puerto de Pajares, before we get really steep, he was low on energy there. And he said that attack on the final 3 kilometers, when there was the right turn and it got super steep, that gave him energy. He said that attack gave me wings to go full throttle. I mean, it seemed absurd, it seemed really quite a silly thing to do. The ferocity of that attack was almost as if he thought the finish was 500 meters from where they were rather than 3 kilometers, and you know, a long 3 kilometers at that. But it was remarkable, wasn't it? And incredibly cinematic as well, despite the mist, or perhaps because of it. This sort of slugging match between him and Vlasov so evident, you know, and I think it's partly, I don't know if you noticed this, Daniel, as well, neither of them were wearing their glasses. They had them both.
Yeah.
Well, Castrillo's one on top of his helmet. I'm not sure what Vlasov's done with his, but you could really see their faces. And that's often, you know, people like to look back at the golden days of cycling with rose-tinted glasses. But it is true that you can't always see that much of people's faces anymore. And that was a part of it. And the way that Castrillo was just sort of fighting himself and Vlasov and kept surging and finding something else in reserve was astonishing, really, for a rider of his size, I suppose, as well. But then, you know, maybe on La Manzanera the other day, the riders could be forgiven for not treating him seriously, is the wrong word, but perhaps being surprised by just how strong he was, because he's a guy who rides for Keon Farmer, it's his first Grand Tour, and so on and so on. But there were no excuses this time, really.
The last rest day saw a changing of the guard in the cycling podcast car, highly apt on a stage to the Lagos de Coro.
Miguel entra en el Hotel Capitán, gran expectación de público para ver, y Miguel Lindonet, pues, que se retira de la Vuelta a España.
Ahí lo estamos viendo en estas imágenes desde el helicóptero.
What are you doing?
Yo me quedo por aquí. Fue un placer, señores.
Superman.
No,
well,
I am.
Actually,
but
you may be someone else. I'm looking at the sign up here.
Rob, I'm abandoning the Vuelta. It's been a long 2 weeks. I know it's your first day, but I'm abandoning, inspired by, well, the most famous abandonment ever in the Vuelta a España. And we're at, well, you tell the listeners where we are.
We're on the road between Arriondas and Cangas on the way to a big cathedral for a big man.
Big cathedral for a big man.
Covadonga.
Covadonga. And the cathedral with the big man being?
Big man. Big Mig.
Big Mig. So, yeah. This is where the road, well, it was the end of the road for Miguel Indurain. Hotel El Capitan. Mentioned it in the podcast the other day, Rob. One of a series of, well, we talked about these sort of legendary hotels in cycling history. Iconic hotel locations. El Capitan, 1996, Miguel Indurain, well, his dynasty had just ended in the Tour de France. He'd sort of been at loggerheads with his Banesto team for the whole season. He was only 32. The Vuelta a España that year, it wasn't going brilliantly for Indurain, but it wasn't going badly either.
He was still up there, wasn't he, in the GC?
He was third on general classification that morning. But, Rob, you were talking earlier in the car. You've ridden this climb. It's on the route today, the Fito, Mirador del Fito. Apparently, on the top of that climb, Miguel Indurain, he accosted his direct sportif at the time, who was Eusebio Unzué, who was still the team manager of Movistar, and he said, "I got legs like two floorboards." Right. And tablas. Is that, would that be the translation?
I guess so.
And Unzué said to him, "Well, Miguel, just ride to the hotel." Banesto was staying here at El Capitan. So I'm not even sure if he was dropped at that point, because we've just watched the coverage on TV and you see Big Mig in a fairly big group and he just pulled to the side of the road, got off his bike. Apparently his mechanic was waiting here and he said, "This might be the end." And it was the end.
No, and we're surrounded by a sort of typical Asturian sight. There's mountains on either side. It's very green. You've got the huge corn fields across the road. And there's an old house that, when we were just watching those images again, is still there. It's abandoned. It's overgrown. The sort of living room's now possessed by a bit of a tree. And he gets off. He walks across the road. He's, as you say, shepherded there. And there's a bit of a media scrum. They're looking down from their helicopter.
A media scrum for us.
Not for us, no.
Apparently,
we're not that important yet.
Apparently, though, we should just go inside, because I think there is one picture of him in here. He returned here, and apparently he does return. Whenever he's in the area, he does return. And there should be somewhere a plastic sign saying something along the lines of, well, Miguel Indurain stopped cycling here. Just walking through the front door now, I think we saw a lady a minute ago, the receptionist. Should we ask them, Rob?
See. Si.
Hola, bueno.
Estamos trabajando en la Vuelta.
Sí.
Y obviamente este es el famoso sitio donde Indurain abandonó la Vuelta.
El tema fue memorable. Sí.
¿Estaba usted?
Aquí, en el hotel. No, estaba en Cangas de Onís.
Vale.
Ni idea, pero bueno, es que son deportistas de fama mundial. Quiero decir, él, Rafael Nadal, Fernando Alonso, son deportistas, en este caso españoles, que
uno de los más famosos de la historia.
Vamos, que son históricos.
Well, Rob, that was an unconventional Encuentro del Día. I don't know whether the subject was the ghost of Miguel Indurain, who's still alive, fortunately, whether it was El Capitan.
Chaos tends to follow Marc Soler around, but he avoided all of it to claim a famous victory at a hallowed Vuelta location. No such luck for Van Aert, who crashed out, or Ben O'Connor, who kept the jersey but lost his composure. Understandably, in bizarre circumstances.
Was misunderstood.
No, that was
the very misunderstood. I don't know if the listeners will have heard it, but talking of misunderstandings, Rob, just tell us what's just happened.
Well,
what happened half an hour ago? So, go back in time a bit and tell us what happened about half an hour ago.
A bit longer than that, wasn't it? Red jersey, again, spoiler alert, is Ben O'Connor. He has just returned to the podium here. It's raining outside. It's Orbayando. I'll explain that later in the episode. It's raining outside, that fine rain that soaks you through, and he just stormed out of the podium, shouted that he was effing freezing.
He was
and he was freezing, to be fair.
He was slightly unhappy. But explain, let's piece this together, Rob. Explain what happened when Ben O'Connor, we were there, we were standing next to him, what happened when he came over the line, having saved the red jersey, another spoiler, by how many seconds was it?
Five.
What happened?
He didn't seem very happy. I was wondering at first whether he was unhappy with his own performance because he lost, you know, a good part of a minute, didn't he?
We knew he'd kept the jersey.
We knew he'd kept the jersey, but Daniel, we kept quiet because I think we were both worrying that we'd made a miscalculation. We hadn't, as Sean Kelly always likes to say, made the calculation correctly. We were looking up at the big screen. It was chaos up there, wasn't it? It was an absolute disaster. My first day on the World Tour. I don't know what I've done to bring this. So I can completely understand why O'Connor is unhappy now, because after that situation at the top there, he was shaking his head. He went back down to the buses, Daniel, all the way down the climb.
His body language seemed inconsistent with someone who had just, in a miraculous sort of rearguard effort, particularly in the last couple of kilometres, had saved the red jersey in the Vuelta a España. And, well, as we've sort of hinted already, you and I were about to say something because we sensed that there might have been a misunderstanding. Adding to the misunderstanding, a couple of minutes later, well, after he'd gone, I heard his soigneur, well, in fact, we've got the audio. Listen to
we
this.
Need to listen to it back.
So that was Decathlon, one of Decathlon's soigneurs, telling Valentin Paris-Peintre, in French of course, that Ben had kept the jersey by 5 seconds.
Are we sure he said kept? What? I mean...
Yeah, he did. So... I can't remember whether you've explained this already, Rob, but Ben O'Connor had to ride all the way down the mountain, bypassing the podium presentation.
15 kilometres, that is, down the mountain.
15 kilometres, and, well, that was about, I don't know, 45 minutes ago, an hour ago. The podium presentation has just happened. We think we're waiting behind it, but Ben O'Connor has lost an hour of his evening, or 45 minutes, an hour of his evening. And that is obviously not what you want when you're trying to defend the leadership of a major tour.
And not in these conditions as well, because it's hard to relay how horrible the weather is up here. It's been spitting since we've been here this afternoon. It's got gradually worse. It's cold. I mean, I've got two jackets and a T-shirt on. I'm cold. I've got cold feet. You know, just imagine what these guys are like after the thousands and thousands of kilojoule days that they've had, the temperatures up and down the mountains. There's been some nasty crashes that we hear about as well. All sorts has gone on today. And there was a huge bit of confusion at the top that we said. We'll go into what happened. Maybe I think the organisation, maybe the Spaniard could have done a better job. Nobody stopped him. And again, it's not really Ben O'Connor's fault. And I can understand why he's angry. But as we've just seen, he is angry.
I'm not happy, I can tell you that. I'm trying to put on a brave face, but yeah, internally, I'm a bit pissed.
Into Cantabria, home of three-time world champion Oscar Freire. He was the subject of our Encuentro del Día, with his son, Marcos, an aspiring pro, the main topic of conversation.
You used to be, we think, very relaxed, but sometimes your head in the clouds a little bit. You were famous for forgetting things. Is Marcos, does he have a similar personality?
Yeah, sometimes, because the problem now is not the problem maybe for Marcos, it's for everybody. they are always thinking in the phone and Instagram, and they don't know how difficult is the real life sometimes. So the problem of the young people is to they have to build the future in this moment, and they don't know about they are not thinking in the future, and they are living always in the present with really stupid things like the phone, internet, or something like this.
Deep into week three, David Gourdou was having an excellent Vuelta and looking like a new rider, partly thanks to the coiffure.
David Gourdou started the day in sixth place at 3 minutes 48, a minute and a half behind Mikel Landa in fifth.
But we also talked yesterday about the interesting new look he's been sporting, the interesting new coiffure he's been sporting and eyewear at this Vuelta a España. I think we can hear a bit of David Gourdou, and then Rob's going to tell us a little bit about what he said.
Et donc la dernière chose, ton look, parlons-en. Est-ce que jusqu'à quel point Salbe, ça vient après, je crois. Le nouveau surnom, le look, inspiré par quoi?
De base, je suis quelqu'un qui déteste aller au coiffeur.
Rob, Salt Bay. He was very amused, wasn't he?
He was. I tell you what, he's doing well, isn't he, to keep all those restaurants going, yes. Serve all that, sprinkle the salt, get the gold leaves, and be fighting for the top five in the world.
There
what a performance.
There we go. And he said, well, he doesn't like going to the hairdressers, and he just sort of, you know, he improvised.
You did ask him as well if the celebration was coming with a sort of bent arm, sprinkling the salt.
He didn't rule it out.
He was laughing, and at the same time I was holding up a picture of salt, but just to sort of hammer it home to see who he was talking about.
He didn't rule it out. He also said that Marc Madiot, his team manager, has got no issue with the coiffure or the eyewear.
He doesn't think. He qualified that with he doesn't think.
On stage 11 in the Basque Country, Kern Farmer bagged their third stage win of the race. A crazy return on a crazy day. As one of the men in the thick of the mayhem, EF Education Easy Post James Shaw could attest.
I don't know how many times they're going to let us have a crack at this, because we've done it a couple of times this race, and I think it's not the case of like letting us do it, but the starts here are just mental. Like it's, the first hour, everyone just going fucking bananas, really.
O'Connor's advantage over Roglic was rice paper thin, just 5 seconds ahead of the return to Moncalvillo, where Rog had won before. Finally, it was time for the fairy tale to meet its film noirish denouement, with Roglic cast as the executioner.
Judgment Day finally came for Ben O'Connor. Primoz Roglic landed the coup de grace.
Yeah, I wasn't really surprised, but I didn't expect myself to be so bad at the end, so a bit average, to be honest, but yeah, I guess that's just the reality.
It's always hard, no? Always is, every situation or every Vuelta is a different one. Still, today we won, but tomorrow the big one to come, the Queen stage, the hard climb at the end, and yeah, not finished yet, so on Sunday, yeah, is the final one to really put a line over
one rest. Final trip into the mountains. For a few in the field, like Thomas de Gent, Robert Heysink, and our beloved Luis Angel Mate, the final one of their racing careers.
The most important part of my life finished today. It's my last meeting in the booth. It's my last travel in the booth with the teammate. It's my last control of signature. Maybe also it's my last interview.
Yes. You're happy about that?
It's really emotional. It's really special. And
the next 3 hours will be laden with suspense, only because Roglic's team has succumbed en masse to stomach bug. Finally, on the last ascent of Picon Blanco, he could breathe. And as he did, Eddie Dunbar stole away for his second stage win.
Rob Ash, buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes.
Where are we?
We're at the top of the Picon Blanco, beautiful clouds sitting below us. It's a green, sunny, beautiful afternoon. And we're about to be joined by someone very special.
We've got a special guest. We've got a special guest joining us live. Well, we're going to spoiler the result of today's stage and tell you that it was won again. Second stage win of the Vuelta a España for Jayco Alula and for Eddie Dunbar. And we're joined by, well, Mr. Jayco Alula, Jerry Ryan. Jerry, you must be a very happy man tonight.
I certainly am. And I decided today not to be in a team car, to be up here at the finish. And how exciting. I was just cheering Eddie on and you know, he used not only his legs, his head, and it was a great ride. And he said the last couple of days that his legs are feeling better, and he's riding to some form. And he just had that twinkle in his eye this morning, and the rest is history. And I think we'll celebrate tonight.
How will you celebrate tonight?
I think we might open a nice bottle of vino.
Any ideas about the vino?
Could be some bubbly and some red.
Excellent. Enjoy that. Thanks, Jerry. Victories. We do expect Primož Roglič to win his fourth Vuelta a España tomorrow. And I was saying that it's felt to me as probably the most comfortable and the most serene. I think if you go back and look at the results and look at the stages, 2019 can appear as though it was also serene and smooth sailing throughout. However, that was his first Grand Tour victory, and we had the memory of a bit of a wobble, let's face it, in the 2019 Giro d'Italia, and there were big doubts at that point as to whether Primož Roglič was a Grand Tour winner in waiting. So there was that sort of anxiety, that suspense hanging over that Vuelta a España in 2020. He came very close to losing a shortened edition of the Vuelta on the last or the penultimate day to Richard Carapaz. 2021, there were some wobbles as well, and it seems strange to say, almost strange to say, particularly given the prelude to this Vuelta a España, what happened at the Tour de France, and how he was probably, I think he was being written off by a lot of people. I even said, I think in our race preview, that it felt to me as though that was one crash, one disaster, one debacle too many. It feels strange to say that this has, the Ben O'Connor 4:51 advantage after Junqueira aside, it has seemed unerring.
It has almost seemed inevitable. Once the time was started to be taken back, that it would happen. And that's no, you know, slight on Ben O'Connor or anybody else who's been up there in the general classification. I think for me, the initial question was whether he would start to take that time back. And we saw it the day after, didn't we? He was straight away trying to chip away. A couple of days later, he took well over a minute back. And then for me, then we got the Sierra Nevada and it started to seem inevitable.
Of course, there was still a potentially decisive TT to ride. And it wasn't as though Primož Roglič had lost a Grand Tour in one of those. Happily for Roglič, the guts that had got him through the last 3 weeks remained robust enough to see him home. O'Connor and Enric Mas joined him on the podium in the Plaza de Cibeles, before we and they headed off into the twilight, its memories locked in our heart, dancing across our mind's eye, and singing in our ears. Rob Hatch, buenas tardes for the last time of this Vuelta a España. Where are we?
We are in Madrid, just outside of, across from Plaza Cibeles. We're actually stood on the roundabout, aren't we? Surrounded by thousands of fans. We've got Slovenian flags, Ecuadorian flags, Spanish flags, and of course, the beautiful podium in a brilliant setting. On what's been a nice warm day, the evening light, sun just going down.
Sun
dipping. It is perfect.
Yeah. The sun just setting over Plaza Cibeles. Who have we got? Well, we're surrounded by, you already mentioned, the Slovenian fans, not quite as vociferous as the Ecuadorian fans, who we'll hear later. They always turn out in force here at the Vuelta a España. Rob, give us a name check. Who can you see?
Solbe. Mr. Thompson is here as well. There's a few people just taking pictures after of
there. I thought he was going to do it.
He heard the words.
Yeah. And we can see Stefan Kung, the stage winner. There's the first spoiler of tonight's podcast.
Pachi Vila's walking out as well, the winning sports director.
Maybe Pachi will spare a minute for us. Later, there's another spoiler. I think people will probably pick it up.
Sorry, oops. Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yes, Rob. But yes, we are very much in the midst of the podium presentation, the celebrate race, but that was not the case. They sort of, here we go. We've got a speech from Primož.
It's Rog.
What can he say?
At the end, the most important is that you try to always focus just on the task that you have. I mean, it's the only thing that you can control, your inputs, I mean, what we do, if that means that is enough for the win, we will win. If it's some other place, we will be also happy, because some other guys are just better. I mean, I also went 20 times to the toilet today already and all these things, but I mean, it's like, you know, at the end, I'm way too far, I cannot let it go. I will finish it off, it is how it is. Definitely some challenges.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.